Blog Talk Radio.
Many people regard you as a personification of Ubuntu. What do you understand Ubuntu to be?
In the old days, when we were young, a traveler through a country would stop at a village and he didn't have to ask for food or for water. Once he stops, the people give him food, entertain him. That is one aspect of Ubuntu, but it will have various aspects. Ubuntu does not mean that people should not enrich themselves. The question, therefore, is, are you going to do so in order to enable the community around you to be able to improve? These are the important things in life. And if one can do that, you have done something very important which will be appreciated.
This is the Open Source Report on the 6th of September, 2015. Imei here at the heart of Cranston Software. This is our, what we'll call our public effort, is ongoing. When we were founded in 1988, we decided that Cranston Software would serve the highest and best interest of humanity. We sold shareware from literally coast to coast, country to country, around the world. And the shareware movement was very big at that time. This was software that was on a trial basis, a little different situation there. At that time, you had a lot of applications across the gamut, and including one of the things we started out was selling Unix toolkits. And toolkits were very popular at that time. We were primarily operating in a DOS environment. Windows came later. And, of course, the Linux kernel came out in the early 90s. I remember Kernel 1. We used to compile those on 3.5 disks. That's how far I went back. Now you need a DVD and, of course, it's expandable. Just this week, we upgraded to, I believe, 4. Let me just look at this. The current stable kernel, we're using the Slackware edition, and current, they're at 4.2. We upgraded to 4.1.6. So we now have the 4. Kernel operating on a notebook, and we'll get it on our Linux servers shortly here in the next week or two, and we'll finally move to a new plateau, so to speak. We are attempting still to get these reports out about every week. We have not been able to do that. Part of the problem is you have to adjust at bostonred.org. We have Boston Red, the political program that we do out of Boston, and we also have Numbers Man, an economics program. You can get it this weekend on many of these outlets that we're on. And, of course, this, the technical program, we do the political program 5 to 6 days a week, and the macroeconomic program usually once a week, sometimes twice a week, a lot of economic news out there to cover. So what we're trying to attempt to do here is bring you the latest developments, not only in open source, but in security and other things around such products as Mozilla and various others. Let me just go to linux.com here, and then we'll go to some of these specifics that we have been, as they say, keeping abreast here for quite a while with various aspects here. Now, this is will be in the Linux 4.3 is working on a sound support for Skylake and other new audio drivers. They're constantly coming out. This is Skylake-related support will be in it, and some of the sound cards that will appear from Circus and various other Retac. They have what? Let's see what it is. RT2 9.8 drivers will be there, and also machine drivers, rock chip systems. So dealing with sound has been one of the things that in the Linux space we need to deal with. Obviously, has always been graphics and the desktop, no doubt about that. So these kinds of things are more and more coming out every day. And we'll tend to see more and more of that. Announcing an open source open ID connect ID provider. This is CoreOS out here. CoreOS open source project called DAC is a standards based identity provider and authentication system. We just sort of moving around a little bit here. Today, pleased to announce the new CoreOS open source project called DAC, a standards-based identity provider authentication solution. Just about every project requires some sort of authentication, no doubt about that. And going more and more, incidentally, on that to two-factor authentication. Let me just look at DAC here. Okay, it is on GitHub, so we, oops, just a second here, my pointer sort of betrayed me here, so we have to, anyway, nonetheless, it is on GitHub DAC. One of the things, another thing we've been keeping around here, this is an interesting thing. Can cloud collaboration and data and analytics cure cancer? This is something that's been going on for quite a while here. After decades of research, this is a columnist, Rob Enderle, it's not being shared and analyzed effectively. One of the things that we've been looking at here, one of our little pet projects, this may be changing thanks to Intel and the Oregon Health and Science University. Intel, one of his oldest clients, recently held a developers forum this year, was particularly well done. But one thing stood out for me is a small part of the Internet of Things. And you'll hear more and more about the Internet of Things session focusing on data analytics and curing cancer. And cancer is one of those topics that I'm surprised we don't talk about more, given half of the men and a third of the women will experience in a lifetime. I can attest to that, having prostate cancer. Two people with the same kind of cancer, usually the same treatments, have dramatically different outcomes. One may live, the other one may die, largely because the treatment wasn't matched to their unique genetic makeup. Cancer has killed a relatively large number of people. I grew up with both in and outside of my family, and frankly, the disease scares the hell out of him. This is the author speaking here. Intel, along with the Oregon Science and Health and Science University, announced a collaborative cancer cloud, and we'll link to this. This could cure cancer data. Analytics to help doctors develop cancer treatment plans in a day. Well, more accurately, we could hook you up with a cure that already exists, but you can't get to it at the moment. You'll see if you or someone else you love gets cancer, it is more likely a cure exists, but it's lost in some of the cancer research centers. Your doctor can't connect you to it. This is a problem that Intel and the Oregon Health University are working on. They have the cancer prevention problem. It used to be that we didn't know enough about cancer to properly address it. Well, we have decades of study this deadly disease, and we know collectively a great deal about it today. We know, for instance, that the best treatments need to be matched up to the genetic makeup of the patient and the version of cancer they have. The issue of these huge cancer research centers are afraid to share their data for security reasons, and data sets are so big you can't send them any place in order to pull the analytics. Excuse me, the cancer could be a collaborative cancer cloud is a secure method for connecting these mass data sets together, big data we call it, analyzing results against patients' unique genetic makeup and that the type of cancer. Going live in 2016, this effort could save your life, the lives of some people, a person that you care about, or people that you care about. Looking at data analytics different. And incidentally, this is one of the big things we're getting into here at Cranston, more into data analysis. We've done that on the political front in using predictive analyses to model election and election outcomes. It stands to reason that the same approach could be used not only in other diseases, heart disease, diabetes, Alzheimer's, are all on the list, but to other problems like global warming, defense, space travel, artificial intelligence, AI, natural disaster forecasting, alerting, and the long-term survival and happiness of the human species. Grandiose idea there. If we want to solve some of these huge problems, we can to connect to information with a variety of companies, industry, and even government institutions in a secure fashion. At the heart of this is a willingness to share data for the common good. We typically don't typically like to share data at this scale, more willing to share than the generations that are currently running government and industry. Given the stage set there, it's time to pull all the collective data to put it all to good use. Programs like the Collaborative Cancer Cloud, showcase how these huge problems can be solved as a part of technology, but another part is realizing that finding the answer in many cases is far more important than hoarding the data. Ron Indery is president and principal analyst at the Indery Group. He previously was senior research fellow for Forrester Research there, and prior he worked for IBM, held positions in internal audit and competitive analysis, marketing, finance, etc. He writes on emerging technology, security, Linux, for a variety of publications, appears on national TV shows, including CNBC, Bloomberg, and NPR. So this was an article in CIO. Remember, we're getting CIO there, and when Ms. Lundberg was the editor of CIO, put a plug in for Abby. She works hard, and she is somewhere on, I believe, our Twitter feed at Boston Red. You can find Abby Lundberg. But nonetheless, we are enthusiastic about the analytic cloud coming about, and this is the sort of thing that open source type technologies come out. In the last show, we talked about open source versus Libre. For a practical or pragmatic standpoint, there is a little difference in them, and we'll talk about it more in other shows on that political front. Let's go to some of the other stuff we have been, as they say, hoarding around here for a number of weeks, actually. And now is obviously the time to bring some of those to fruition. And we'll do that. Incidentally, our Twitter feed is Cranston Saltware. You can always find us there. Recent bulletin here. Now, this is from Fox, exploit found in the wild. This is on August the 5th. You informed Fox Fire informed users that an advertisement on a new site in Russia was servicing a Fox Fire exploit. They were searching for sensitive data and uploading them to servers that appear to be in Ukraine. A security update has been released for that particular vulnerability. That would be in Foxfire 39.03. A little bit older data here, but nonetheless, it is out here. Let me just finish this up. On Windows, the exploit looks more subversive in the S3 browser and in the FileZilla configuration file. There, on Linux, the exploit goes after the usual global configuration file in etc password, then uses the user directory it can access and look in the Bosch file history and the MySQL history and some others, the SS configuration keys, etc. Mac users are not usually normally targeted there. The exploit leaves no trace. It has been running on a local machine. If you use Foxfire on Windows or Linux, it would be prudent to change any passwords. We recommend people change passwords and move to more secure types of passwords as soon as possible. Now, this is out on the 5th. Mozilla data stolen from a hacked bug database was used to attack Foxfire. An attack stole a security-sensitive vulnerability information from Mozilla. This is at the Mozilla bug tracking system and probably used it to attack Foxfire users, the maker, of course, of open-source browser. In an FAQ published alongside the Mozilla blog about the attack, the company added that the loss of information appears to stem from a privileged user compromised account. The user appeared to have reused their Bugzilla account password on another site, which has suffered a data breach. The attackers then allegedly gained access to sensitive Bugzilla accounts and was able to download security-sensitive information about flaws in a Foxfire and other Mozilla products. Mozilla added the attacker accessed 185 non-public Foxfire bugs, of which 53 involved server vulnerabilities. 10 of the vulnerabilities are unpatched at this time, while the remainder have been fixed. And that's what we were actually reading from a month ago in recent versions of Foxfire. Of the 10 unpatched bugs, the company believes the attacker used one to exploit a Foxfire vulnerability at the beginning of August. That's the one we just read out of the Ukraine area. Mozilla said that it cannot prove that the attacker who accessed the privileged Bugzilla user account had exploited any vulnerabilities. The company added it has fixed all the vulnerabilities that the attacker learned about and could use to harm Foxfire users in the release, the new version on the 27th of August. And this is why it is important to keep your browsers up to date. It's all been noted. A software company noted it confirmed instances of unauthorized access to Bugzilla as early as September of 2014. Mozilla does not divulge when it discovered there had been unauthorized access to the Firefox. For some reason I've got that wrong. Anyway, but it says that when it discovered the attack, it shut down the compromised account and contacted a third-party security firm to complete a forensic analysis, which was prudent on their part. We're updating Bookzilla's security practices to reduce the risk of further attacks of this kind, Mozilla wrote on its blog. An immediate first step, all users have access to security system information, have been required to change their password, and we're back to this two-factor security. The company added it's also reducing the number of users with privilege access and limiting what privileged users can do. Now, this was posted on Aerotechr out of the UK. And we put this on our Twitter feed and also on the Cranston feed. Let me just move on with a few other things here. Some old business to be taken care of here. Windows 10 is the world's fourth biggest operating system after a month. Now, that is out of the propaganda mill of Microsoft. There has jumped into fourth position as a desktop with a respectable 5.2% of the market. The 4 months of figure, this is from NIT market share, shows that the new arrival has taken users most notably from Windows 7, but also from Windows 8. The world's most popular system dipped to 57.67 there. Meanwhile, Windows 8 went down to 11.39% there, and that's 8.1, I'm sorry, and Windows 8 to 2.56%. We can't expropriate from how many of the 75 million machines Microsoft claims to have run already were new purchases. Probably very, very few. This was an operating system that they mimicked Apple by effectively giving it away. The XP system has a slight rise in use. Yes, it did. We didn't think we'd written it off. It's a tiny rise of 12.14%. Peculiar anomaly, which is significantly takes the shine of the impressive debut of Windows 10. In the Mac OS version 10.10 keeps its position in the number 5 OS with 4.76. Here, Linux drops significantly to 1.63, something we need to do in promoting this. The pre-release of Mac OS 11, X11, which is a public beta, has seen of 0.15. Older versions of Mac total merely, 2.82. These numbers are not all that significant in that didn't give those for Android, but we kept this around these numbers. A lot of these numbers are a bit out of focus. Let's just say that. Here's an article here. Mozilla loses its first Foxfire for iOS preview, has announced the preview release for long-awaited Firefox, I don't know why I keep calling it that, for iOS, that's Max. But before you drop your vintage erotic magazine and ruffle through the mustache in the drive for the Apple Store, the rollout is currently for testers in New Zealand. You'll have to wait a little bit longer. We are running out here. Because of the unique way that Apple is locked down, Firefox for iOS is unable to provide a full version of its browser, and it's required to use a built-in Safari rendering engine. So a little bit different there with Foxfire, and that is the Apple OS. It is proprietary. That's one thing people need to remember here. And let's see if we can pick anything else up here from this particular site. Google has been updating custom tabs, no more drive websites. And let's see. They have a new logo also at Google. Let's pretend and ignore the elephant in the room. Google's new logo reflects the changing aspiration of the company as a part of a wider Alphabet framework. No doubt. We've changed the logo for this feature to something simple. I guess it's simple. We'll have to put a shot of it on our deal. The big story this week is the arrival of custom tabs for Chrome. They are nifty little things that allow applications to open page in Chrome in the background without going to all fluff. Process of loading and loading the whole thing. Imagine you your feed reader or newspaper application can load the pages you want before you even know you want it. So, as let's see, the Yusop there at Google. Describes it as blurring the line between web pages and applications, which is a pretty good description. Custom tabs are optimized to load faster than web view, and traditional methods of launching Chrome applications can preload pages in the background so they appear to load nearly instantly when the user navigates to them. Applications can also customize the look and feel of Chrome to match their application by changing the toolbars, their color, adjusting transition animation, and even adding custom actions to the toolbar. Let's see. Twitter, Feedly, Twitter, and The Guardian are rolling out the technology with more to come. One type of website won't work, however, is the type hosted in Google Drive. The little used features was removed at the end of August. Google still allows hosting, though. Chrome 45 has launched, and as previously reported, it's in the process of automatically phasing, pausing selection, i.e. advertising flash content to try to make the internet a bit faster. We hope so. And finally, you can try typing the fun factor into Google. So, anyway, from Google, let us move on here. We'll get this human interest story here. This is when Amstrad launched its word processor 30 years ago. I do remember this. Typewriter, you are fired, and how writers learn to love computers. Even by the standards of the gray was the, let's see, the gray of the buttress gray, 1980s computer, the Armstead PCW8256. Was an unlovely thing. The poet Hugo Williams decided to stick with his old Adler typewriter and dismissed it as a gruesome gulag of benign plastic. While he failed to win over Williams, the Armstead did manage to convert a vast army of its fellow authors. It launched 30 years ago in September of 1985. And was significant in the British literary culture. PCW stood for Personal Computer Word Processor, but as a general computer, the Armstead was limited. It really had one purpose, to process words faster and better than a typewriter. And in 1985, I'll just summarize this, a minority of writers used word processors. Remember when President Carter started using the word processor? Pioneers tend to be science fiction writers, Isaac Asimov and Arthur C. Clarke, who were exposed to the technology. And let's see what else we can find here. The Armstead challenged for this for the simple reason that it cost roughly £399. The word processing and dot matrix printer included, while an Apple, a Mac, an IBM system cost four times as much. The Armstead price lured in writers who were beginning to realize that on their Smith Corollas and Olivetti's, I remember that. Olivetti, incidentally, also had a computer. The Armstead, in other words, it was a word processor's Model T Ford, an entry-level, low-cost machine with the all-expensive non-essentials such as color, sound, and aesthetic there. And it had no mouse. It's a 12-inch monitor displayed, eye-straining green letters, like some of the early PCs. And we'll skip down this article here. But anyway, the Armstead is interesting to remember it. Joe Moran here that sent this out. And this is from Alan Sugar with an early Armstead computer in 1984. We'll have to see if we can put this up on our deal. Lord Sugar, he's on a Twitter feed also. Let me move along here, or attempt to move on. Now, this is from just the open source. Well, some things we've been lying around here. Linux helped rural students transform rocky academic start. No doubt. This is in an agricultural village here. We won't get into where it is, but anyway. Received from the Netherlands. In fact, if you recall, Ubuntu used to be in the Netherlands. Well, in fact, he's getting to that now. A few weeks, a shipment from Netherlands. We used to get disks also there. Great motivation to try Linux. Without hesitation, he installed Ubuntu, and we come in with, for me, I was schooled for 12 years, and during the time, there was one computer science class available to me, and this is, from India, is where this gentleman is writing from. And he talks about his introduction to Linux and how he took computer science classes. Our club activity includes sessions and workshops on various open source projects ranging from Foxfire add-on development to CMS to make your own Linux using SUSE Studio. He graduated in 2012. Today, open source and open web and Linux are important and critical parts of his life. This is the author speaking here. And I often speak and tell people I believe that the $9 Linux machine will help us realize the dream of every child owning a computer. Where one time we were organizing around a $100 machine, I believe Red Hat had their OS on it. And it was a project out of MIT. And it sort of bit the dust there, but nonetheless, it was one of the early ideas of cheap computing. Now, that was before the Android and the Android tablets were out there. Let me see if I can get an up-to-date story here, and we'll move on. User Data Manifesto 2, the Alliance for Open Media and More News. We have looked at this for some time, so we'll just grab a little bit of this. Open Source News Roundup. This is for August 30th through the 5th. Founders of OwnCloud release User Data Manifesto. OwnCloud Contributors Conference here. And control over user data, that's in the manifesto. Knowledge of how user data is stored, freedom to choose a platform. And the Alliance for Open Media to create open media formats. Now, some people involved in this, Amazon, Cisco, Google, Intel, Microsoft, Mozilla, Netflix have joined together to create the Alliance for Open Media. An open source project will develop the next generation media formats, codecs, and technology in the public interest, according to their press release. Interoperability and openness, optimized for the web, scalable to any modern day device and any bandwidth, designed with low computation formats and optimized for hardware. Capable of consistent, high-quality, real-time video delivery. That's what they said in the press release, and we shall see what happens here. New open source fonts announced here also. The Hack interface, Hack target audience is programmers, commonly confused carry. Oh, I see one. Anyway. Overpass, another font out here that will improve things as they move along. Let me move to Katie here. This is a number of things that have been, as they say, saved up around here for a bit, but we want to get them all in. Plasma 5.4, the most advanced and beautiful Linux desktop. Says in this release, this was released on August the 26th. There's something interesting going on desktop computing. The UI is becoming heavily influenced by mobile computing, from Windows to Nomi. You can see heavy influence of mobile IS as the KD Plasma desktop, of which I consider to be, this is from the author here, the most advanced environment is no exception. KD Community released Plasma 5.4, a major update to their desktop environment. We use it. It's in the Slackware edition now, not Plasma 4.5, but KD is. Nothing is perfect. No exceptions there. And he's talking about what KMail gets something around anyway. What is new? The Plasma's arrival of Application Dashboard Launcher, a huge fan of the Home Run Launcher, and it's used as default here. And basically five components. A search bar that allows you to simply run a search. And let's see, awesome favorites that will allow you to add applications for quick access there. What else? What else? Well, I suppose Plasma users get over 1,400 new icons that cover not only KD applications but also third-party applications such as Dropbox. It'll be interesting there. And brand new sound volume applet is on Plasma. And Wayland, that's KD, along with other major communities, are putting their weight behind. That's the successor to the X server. That's Wayland. Wayland, the display server for Linux. So Wayland moves on. KD community in the press release. On systems with free graphics drivers, it's possible to run Plasma. Using KWin, that is Plasma's Wayland Composer, and X11, remember X11, the current status does not allow you to replace the X.org based desktop, but it does allow you to contribute and watch tear-free videos. If you run Wayland on your plasma system, check out the Wilkie. Well, all right. Is there? So, some advances there. Swapanel by Hartzra is the author of that particular article. Let me just quickly run through here to see if we have any other little things out here. Well, we won't. I think we have exhausted some of our stuff. We also want to point out a blog we've been looking at. It's the EEV blog. He's out of Australia. Bob Jones there. And Bob's not your uncle, but the EEV blog. A lot of very good information there if you want to learn electrical engineering. A lot of teardowns there, various things from soldering to how to repair monitors, etc. Something I think that any open sourcer should look to, because open source is a lot more than just the software application. It's also hardware, and those are things that you need to be cognizant of. Follow us on Twitter at Cranston Software. You can always find us there, and on Facebook at Cranston.com. We are always lurking there. This will nonetheless do it for the open source report. And the next broadcast, we'll have more information on our adventure with the Linux kernel 4 and see where we actually end up there as we get OSLikeWare up. It is 14.1, I believe, is the current issue. Nonetheless, that'll do it for us. We'll talk to you next week.